Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service, where we report the world, however difficult the issue, however hard to reach. Podcasts from the BBC World Service are supported by advertising.
I'm Crassy Twick from the Global Jigsaw podcast, where we are asking, 10 years after the start of the war in Yemen, where do the warring parties stand? This battle between rival camps in the Middle East has reached a stalemate. Is there a way out? The Global Jigsaw looks at the world through the lens of its media, getting past the narratives, the propaganda and the disinformation. Find us wherever you get your BBC World Service podcasts.
Hello, I'm Luke Jones and welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. We bring people together to share their experiences. This time, we hear from Israelis, some of whom are still waiting for news of family members who were taken hostage 12 months ago. There was a moment of silent reflection for many this week, marking a year since Hamas gunmen crossed the border from Gaza into Israel. Eden, who's a new mother, is one Israeli who features in our conversation. Like all our guests, she is unable to forget what happened on October 7th.
And that day, I believed that I'm going to lose all of my family members. This feeling still goes with me. The anxiety, I think I'm not the only one that they're afraid to leave the house right now.
On that day, around 1,200 people were killed and 251 taken hostage from Israel into Gaza. Israel's military response to the attack by Hamas, which is regarded as a terrorist organisation by many Western governments, has seen more than 41,000 Palestinians being killed. There have also been hundreds of deaths in the occupied West Bank. This is according to figures from the Hamas and Palestinian health ministries. Israel is also fighting Hezbollah, of course, the armed group and ally of Hamas further north in Lebanon. That's resulted in more than 2,000 deaths there. And on top of this, we had that recent missile attack on Israel by Iran. But beyond the numbers, it's the people that tell the story of a conflict. In last week's episode, three young women in Gaza shared how their lives had changed during the past 12 months. This week, we hear from Israelis. Of those taken hostage by Hamas, 97 remain unaccounted for from that day. And our first conversation is with two people who await news of their loved ones. Elon lives in Tel Aviv. The hostages include his cousin, Yarden Bibas, his cousin's wife, Shiri, and their two children. And Adam is in England, continuing to hope for word about his cousin, Tzaki Adan, whose eldest child, Mayan, was killed in front of her family and broadcast live. In the days running up to the anniversary of the 7th of October, my colleague Krupa Pardee began by asking Adam how he was holding up, and I should say that the conversation contains a description of the attacks and of hostage taking.
Yesterday we marked the birthday of Mayan, my 18-year-old cousin, who was murdered on October 7th, Tzaki's firstborn daughter. It was a very emotional day. It was a very difficult day. Mayan was murdered only a few days after her birthday, when she became a young woman at the age of 18. She would have been 19 yesterday. It's very hard to conceive of someone so young with so much ahead of them, having their life snuffed away like that, in such a brutal way as well, in front of her siblings and her parents. That video clip of her death and the family reaction to the horror of it was one of the earliest viral clips that came out from the October 7th footage, which was circulated around social media with Mayan's younger siblings crying and talking to the terrorists, explaining that they just murdered their sister. And you can see in that video that Tzaki was very shocked, incapacitated by the shock, while Tzaki's wife Gali was trying to protect her two remaining children. It's hard not to think about that moment. It's a difficult time.
Of course. Elon.
It never becomes normal, something that you can get to terms with. And it's something that we shouldn't get to terms with. I think the last few days, weeks, all the news and all the talk is about the new escalation of the war in the north. And it just makes me afraid that it's easier to talk about news that have more new stuff happening And it's easy to put aside for the public the issue of the hostages. And I feel as it's not being talked enough. And for me, every day I think about them. Every day we feel the fact that they are missing and that they are not here and that all the world is so much darker right now.
Is it fair to say from what you've just shared that you feel like your loved ones are being forgotten?
I do feel that. Less in Israel, but more in the international news and the international public discourse. And unfortunately, I still don't think that even after 1 year, I don't think that the fact that this is a humanitarian issue and not a political issue, I still think that it's misunderstood, right? Because targeting civilians and kidnapping civilians is just out of the question. And unfortunately, because it's such a complex situation here in Israel and the Middle East, people talk about it like it's just one point in the whole strategic conflict. And for me, it's my family. For me, it's people that I know and I love, and I'm fearful for their lives. It's really disheartening just hearing the talk about them as just another point in the overall conflict.
I live in Brighton, and we've been doing awareness-raising campaigns about the hostages, including the numerous British-connected hostages, hostages who have either British citizenship or who have British relatives living in the UK. And one thing that struck us was that the majority of people on the street didn't even realize there were hostages. So in terms of like the news cycle is one layer. And then beyond that, the public awareness. And the public awareness is extremely low. Not only that people didn't realize that there were still hostages in Gaza, but they didn't realize that there were hostages with British connection or British citizenship. And I think that was really depressing. So, you know, just to echo Elon's point, I mean, it wasn't just that our families are being sort of treated as a kind of bargaining chip or as a kind of, you know, one factor or one facet of a complex Middle Eastern problem. But it's also the reason why we're stuck here, why we're still here a year later, because it's only ever talked about in those terms. Like, you only ever talk about the hostages in terms of some kind of commensurate deal or ceasefire agreements or whatever. And one of the things that I've been speaking to when I speak to politicians, I met the prime minister last week, I've met the foreign minister here in the UK, and I was in the UN the week before, and I would say the same message, which is that stop conditioning the release of the hostages on anything else. They need to be released purely on humanitarian grounds. Hostages have been released before on humanitarian grounds. And after a year of captivity, we know that the conditions that the hostages are in is extremely dire. The last six hostages that have been recovered after being executed by Hamas were found to have been severely malnourished. Edin Yiril Shami, a 26-year-old woman, was found at 36 kilos, which is about 77 pounds. She should be double that in weight. She was starving to death. Their bodies were riddled with bullet holes, signs of torture and abuse. And we know that every day that they're not home, their lives are in jeopardy. It's a purely humanitarian issue. They should be returned on purely humanitarian ground. We can't talk about ceasefire and aid and other conditionalities associated with the conflict if we don't have the hostages home. By bringing the hostages home, it allows us to start opening up possibilities, other pathways. And I think that that is the swiftest, quickest way to achieve a number of the other objectives in terms of ceasefire and aid, reconciliation, allowing the families to grieve, allowing Israel as a society to kind of come together and process what's just happened and progress things.
On the subject of a ceasefire that you mentioned, and let me put this to you, Elon, the prospect of a ceasefire seems to be withering away as these days go on, as this conflict spreads. And a very similar question to you as well about how you feel about the spread of this conflict to beyond Israel's borders, to Lebanon, to Iran, and how you feel that impacts what might happen to your loved ones, the Bibas family.
I must start from like the thing that the recent ballistic attack from Iran made me realize, and I think it maybe even brought the attention for me just how twisted everything is. I live in a very old house, and when the missiles attacked and were intercepted above the house, I was extremely fearful for my life. The whole house shook like never before, and I actually just lay on the ground and prayed that I'm going to survive this. It was very, very scary, and this was only for about 40 minutes, and it just made me realize that the way I felt 40 minutes is how my family must be feeling for about a year and all of the hostages. So when you think about it that way, you can't, as he said, you can't really think about other stuff and try to progress other avenues when this sort of limbo is happening, right? Because I can't go on. I'm still at the 7th of October. My family is still there, and I still haven't saw them, and I know that their chances of survival are dwindling. And I saw, like, Yarden, that they posted a video of him. It was 11 months ago, and he was already so thin and sickly, and they told him that the entire family is dead, and I just dread to think how he is right now. So for me, I just can't open myself up, and I know that many other people in Israel, in the society, can't open themselves up to really drill into the complexities of other issues, because the whole society is in a limbo. The streets are still about the hostages. So it's hard, like, mentally, psychologically, to put ourselves in all this other stuff. It's a very basic, almost primal thing, right? I want me to be safe, and I want my family to be safe. It's just survival, you know? All I could think about when the missiles attacked was, oh my God, I'm going to die. And all the rest of the time, I think, how is Yarden doing? How is Shiri and the boys are doing? Are they still alive?
We know the hostages are trapped in a vast tunnel network that Hamas have built over decades, larger than the New York subway system or the London Underground. We know that the difficulties in accessing those tunnels and trying to rescue hostages with IEDs, numerous soldiers have died in the process, and thousands of civilians. It's very difficult. There has been negotiations for months, but it doesn't feel like there's been a lot of progress on that front. Every time we've been hearing that there's possibly a deal going to be agreed, it sort of falls apart, and both sides blame each other. I personally find it very difficult to imagine why Hamas would ever agree to a deal, because for them, this is one of the only things that they have holding over Israel, that there's jewels in their crown, then their cards that they can play against us. We also know that they've been using psychological warfare. They've been putting out videos of our loved ones, in many cases treating them like a game show, where they ask the question, are they alive or are they dead? And they never answer the question. Sometimes they show bodies of the hostages, and that's how we kind of have confirmation that some of them have been killed. Sometimes, in the case like of my cousin, we don't know. In the case of Yarden, we don't know. Like Ilan said, the hostages themselves, they might be thinking that their family have been murdered, and they're sitting there tortured with that kind of feeling at home in the tunnels that they're being held in.
On a personal level, as you've rightly pointed out, this is torturous for you and your families. Elon, you are also living through the crisis firsthand there in Israel, as you've highlighted, with rockets going over your home there. How hopeful are you? And if you are hopeful, how do you keep your spirits high about a safe return of your family?
It's not going to be a very happy answer, but the way I keep myself up is by just staying down all the time, because the emotional roller coaster of every talk about a deal and then being disappointed again is just too much to handle. And I just don't believe anything until it happens, because history just showed us that, unfortunately, it always falls apart. The thing that I'm most hopeful for is for intervention by the international community about the hostages situation, because if we leave it to the government and Hamas, it will never stop.
Elon in Tel Aviv in Israel, and Adam, who's in England here in the UK. From the BBC World Service, you're listening to BBC OS Conversations with Israelis remembering the hostages.
I'm Krassi Twick from the Global Jigsaw podcast, where we are asking, 10 years after the start of the war in Yemen, where do the warring parties stand? This battle between rival camps in the Middle East has reached a stalemate. Is there a way out? The Global Jigsaw looks at the world through the lens of its media, getting past the narratives, the propaganda and the disinformation. Find us wherever you get your BBC World Service podcasts.
We can hear next from three young men and women in their 20s in Israel. They are Eden, a travel agent who lives in the south of Israel, close to the border with Gaza. Amir, a musician in Haifa who's about to start a degree in law and communications. And Hillel, who lives in Jerusalem now and is also about to begin his studies.
I live in a town called Nofelon. It's about an hour and a half from the border with Gaza and about 3 hours from the border with Lebanon. So we're safe, I guess, as far, you know, as much as you can be safe. But, you know, I have relatives and friends who live in these areas, and I get to hear about it on the news all the time, you know, about rockets being fired, soldiers being killed, innocent people being killed. It's tough. I think that mentally it takes a big toll.
Eden, how about you?
It's very hard. The trauma is endless. The fear is endless. As long as the hostages are still there, we have no hope for a better future.
I agree.
So recently I get birth from my first child. He's 3 months old.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you. And in my mind, how I imagined my life with children is go out and take a walk and, you know, everything like it should be. But I can't leave the house, actually.
Why not?
Why not? Because every time I leave the house, I see in my imagination, it's not longer, it's not happening right now, but I see terrorists everywhere. In Israel, we have every day a terror attack. Today in Hedera, yesterday in another city in Israel, in Tel Aviv. We're still living the 7th of October every day, if you know what I mean.
You live very close to the border with Gaza in the south, don't you? So what happened to you on the 7th of October? I mean, you must have been very close, if not right at some of the sites of some of the Hamas attacks.
Yes, so the terrorists entered to our city, to our town, and murdered everyone they saw. We heard all of the shooting and the Allah Akbar that they screaming everywhere. My parents, neighbors, they murdered them right next to my parents. And that day, I believed that I'm going to lose all of my family members. This feeling is still goes with me, like then anxiety that we're going to stay alone. I think I'm not the only one that they're afraid to leave the house right now.
Yeah, me too. I just now moved to Jerusalem, which in the past was the site of a lot of deadly terror attacks because of it, you know, being a city that is like in the cultural and religious center of Israel. And I'm scared to leave the house sometimes because I'm afraid of maybe getting killed in a terror attack.
Amir, what about you? You're in Haifa.
Growing up in Israel, in Haifa, we get used to bombing attacks and terror attacks. When I was 3, I had 2 terror attacks in my hometown, in the street I grew up in, where people just blew themselves up in restaurants, in buses. So growing up like that, looking around you is a must because you never know where it's going to get you. Currently, living in Haifa, while we do have co-production with our Arab and Palestinian neighbors, we do take precautions, especially when talking about when you go in the streets, you don't know when an alarm would get you. And just like a missile attack would just occur. Making it normal is just not normal.
We live among Arabs, okay? I'm not meaning that all of the Arabs are terrorists, but you can't know. Like today in Hadera, he just pull out the gun or the knife, whatever he had, and he stab everyone he see in three different places. And the same in Jerusalem, the same in Tel Aviv. You can't know if it's a good person or a bad person. You need to look 10 times around you and think 10 times if you want to leave the house, if it's safe.
I wonder how all of your lives have changed. Eden, you're explaining about how you now leave your house differently. You're so worried. Amir, what about you? Has life after the 7th of October panned out differently to how you might have expected it to?
Yeah, totally. Coming from entertainment business, I worked as a musician in a wedding band. Obviously, no wedding or happy event happened for like 9 or 10 months after the attacks. So I had to look for a new occupation while trying to maintain some quality of living before I start my university studies. I'm scared constantly for my beloved ones. I'm scared of the future as well. So anxiety attacks in Israel only in the last week rose up by 480%.
Can you ever feel like you can get away from it and forget about the war? Or is it just ever present?
We cannot forget about it because it's still happening every day and the hostages are still there. It's something that no one can forget. This is the only conversations that we have right now. We are in the war, in the middle of the war.
I would say that for me, I was never the kind of person who really likes talking about, you know, present day events. Even before the war, it always made me very anxious. And now I'm in this weird place where I don't want to talk about it. I don't want, you know, to keep being in that headspace. But at the same time, I feel like that's the right thing to do. And also that there really isn't much you can do to escape it. You want to go with your friends to grab a beer or something in Tel Aviv. And then a few minutes before you head out, you hear about a terror attack that just happened there. Even if you try to avoid it, you really can't. It really is ever present.
Yeah, I would say about the same. If you would have asked me any other week, I would say that sometimes I can manage a conversation not about the war, but this week when we remember the attacks of October 7th, it's really hard not to have that in mind, not to have in mind that 101 hostages are still being held in Gaza. We do remember that every day, and it's in our hearts always. In my personal circle, we also try to talk about ending this war, bringing the hostages back, bringing the citizens of northern Israel back to their home in security, and creating a link for a diplomatic solution for this case. Sometimes it's either debates, and sometimes it's just like, oh, we just really want this war to end and go back to our normal lives and start building our lives back. Because we're all broken inside since what happened. We lost a lot of trust in people. We lost a lot of life perspective that we once had. And currently, we're just trying to keep our heads above the water.
You're all broadly a similar age, but spread right through Israel. Do you have any questions for each other?
Yeah, I really want just peace and quiet for you guys, especially for you, like, living in Haifa right now. I have friends there. They told me they had so many sirens yesterday. In Sderot, I visited Sderot this May, and I saw all the aftermath of the war, and it was just heartbreaking. And like to think that you had to live through it, I really can't imagine. And I hope no one has to live through anything like that ever again, really.
Amen.
Amen.
Young Israelis, Amir, Eden, and Hillel, on the constant anxiety they say they're experiencing in their country at war. I'm Luke Jones, and you have been listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
I'm Rob Norman.
I'm Andrew Norton.
And on Personal Best, we help you tackle the stuff you'd be too embarrassed to ask an attractive, successful life coach about.
That's right. We have a slightly different approach to self-improvement.
Which is, we don't know what we're doing.
Definitely somebody following me.
Okay, she's holding a sword.
This is so nuts.
But in the end, it always works. Okay, it sometimes works.
You have no idea how happy this makes me.
Personal Best, Season 3, available now wherever you get your podcasts.